Good morning. Welcome to the City of Palm Coast workshop. We are meeting at 160 Cypress Point in the city offices. It's 9 a.m. Please rise and join me for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Vice Mayor McGuire.
Here.
Councilmember DeLorenzo.
Here.
Councilmember Nabil.
Here.
Councilmember Shipley.
Here.
Mayor, please excuse me.
Yeah, the mayor, for those that you do not, that don't know, had a infection in his foot where he had surgery. It was pretty serious. It got serious enough that he was put in the hospital over the weekend, and they had to cut it open and clean it. He is now, I am told, back in Palm Coast, but he's laid up and immobile for a period of time. So please keep him in your thoughts. Okay, agenda item number one, a presentation on energy savings audit update.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And welcome.
This is actually a little project we undertook probably over a year ago now. It's one of those where lack of excitement is a positive thing. It actually was turned out to be very positive because we don't have a lot of exciting news. So, but we still had on our task to do this year is to provide City Council with an overview as to the results and give you the good news, and Steve is going to do that.
Good morning, Council. Steve Lanigan, Community Development Director. Representing the alternative energy and green teams this morning, and excited about giving you this update on our energy audit. The energy savings audit update ties to City Council goal number 4, which is environmental, and basically goes down and hits strategy 4.3.4, implement a citywide energy savings program. On this slide here, you'll see the top 6 energy using facilities that we have in the City of Palm Coast. This just gives you an idea on the amount of FPNL energy consumption that we actually have throughout the city, to better give you an understanding on the amount of savings that's possible if we can reduce consumption. Little bit of history and moving forward, the council had approved the Siemens contract to do an energy audit and potential.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Project. The energy audit was received by the city. The preliminary results, the staff went over the preliminary results and worked with Siemens on the final audit. The final audit came in and showed that the city overall is very efficient, therefore, unfortunately, not finding as many potential savings as possible or as originally thought. The audit analysis verified that, showed that we had some valuable potential savings in the areas mostly of lighting improvements and upgrades.
So Steve, excuse me, Steve.
Sir?
Can you, remind us, and plus we have new council people who weren't here for when we did this originally, can you remind us about how that contract worked?
Certainly. It has options. The contract has options. Originally, the alternative energy team wanted to focus on energy savings, so we explored how can we best do that, and we found a state statute that allows for performance contracting and energy auditing through a state statute. So we went out on the street for an RFQ, and we had 4 companies actually submit for that RFQ, and we went through a process and selected Siemens as the best one out of the 4. We then went into a contract with Siemens, which allows for the audit to be done, and then it also allows for the city to either choose to just accept the audit or to accept the audit and go into a performance contract with Siemens.
And did we pay anything for that?
Yes, we pay $53,000 for the audit.
Steve, will the did they look at the new city hall configuration and see anything there that caused them to raise their eyebrows?
We requested they look at the city hall, but based on our team and that it was going to be designed to be LEED certified, there wasn't really anything there that they came up with to present to the city or present to the team of the city hall.
Okay. Council questions, comments?
I think there's more.
No, there's more.
So staff recommends at this time to not proceed with the energy performance contract that's an option within the agreement with Siemens. However, proceed with the lighting improvements and upgrades that were shown in the audit and recommended in the audit. Funding to be provided or proposed in the fiscal 16 budget, and the improvements to be made utilizing in-house labor as much as possible. There may be some improvements that we don't have the capability to do in-house based on unique equipment and that kind of thing. So what we have here is some examples of some of the savings that have either already been done or are in process of being completed. The first one is eliminated some high-pressure sodium fixtures and replaced them with some LED fixtures at water plant number 2. That project has been done for some time and is saving energy as we speak. Also done at water plant number 2 is they replaced some T12 bulbs with T8s for roughly 40% energy savings on those units. And then one that's in process is we purchased LED fixtures to replace some of the high pressure sodium fixtures at water plant 3. We hope to have that done before fiscal year 15 ends. These projects were all done utilizing in-house labor.
Steve, can you put dollars to any of these? How many dollars of savings are we going to realize?
We can do that. We can come back and do that, Mr. McGuire. I don't have that off the top of my head.
I would think we would want to. I think we would want to justify the money we've spent with Siemens by saying that we've returned savings that pays for it.
We have in the audit, there's clear numbers that show if we do what's proposed in the improvement measures, what the return or what the each year's savings on making those improvements actually are.
I think
are.
It's important that we see that.
Is that in the executive summary that we gave to them?
I believe it is. It tells you that overall in the executive summary.
In your packet, we have. Okay. We provided you with some of those details.
That doesn't have the...
It doesn't have the individual breakdowns. It has the overall.
And it doesn't have the cost either of these. So, for in other words, there was a cost associated to this. So we need to see that.
Right.
Along with the savings so that we can project.
Right. Turn on investment. Yeah.
Right. The summary kind of blankets into bigger pictures. So what this did for our team was to basically refocus us on our goals, some of our goals. So we felt that it was important to re-emphasize that the Alternative Energy Green Team shall remain vigilant and steadfast toward our council city goal of environmental stewardship, sustainability, and energy efficiency.
Where you say that some of the work is going to be done by city employees, most of this work is electrical in nature, I assume. are, so we have journeyman electricians on our workforce?
We have, the work that's been done so far is utility work, and we have an electrician on staff with utility. And then we also hope to utilize and talk to public works facilities to utilize public works facility staff members to be able to do work.
So is it that we hired Siemens and we learned from them and now we can do it ourselves pretty much?
Yes, their team spent a lot of man hours here. Their electrical engineers, their other engineers spent a lot of time here looking at our systems, trying to figure out where savings truly were. They even used specialized equipment to determine in some of the locations you could save electricity if this fixture was replaced out, for example. But if you only use that fixture for an hour a day, the payback's not there. So they use some equipment to determine how many hours a day does this fixture run, or does this facility run, or does this piece of equipment, this pump run, or whatever it might be. So they take all the factors in consideration to determine, is there a more efficient pump? Is there a more efficient light? Can we change out just the bulb? Just the bulb, will just the bulb pay back within 5 years? Or can we replace the entire fixture to a more efficient fixture? But sometimes that payback's too long to make it actually work.
And I want to stress, so it wasn't just lighting. That was the one thing they found, that because of the LEDs, the technology has changed. That was one area. But they look at our AC units. And some of them says, yeah, you could change it out, and 20 years from now, you'll finally get your return on investment. Well, at that point, it's time to change it out again, so it made no sense. So, we have a lot of pumps and those type of things. So, but this is one of those that we have, our electric bills are so high, particularly at a utility, that we had a lot of questions as to could we lower it. And the fact of it is yes. And the summary is there. We can give you the details, but everything we're doing is basically saying that we'll get our return on investment for the replacement cost plus the cost of the audit. But we don't have to do any major. That's the other side of it, because lots of times if you have major expenses with heating and cooling systems or your pumps and other systems of utility, then that's when they actually come in with the it's a financing mechanism where they will finance it for you, obviously with some costs associated with that, and then you use the energy savings to pay. They guarantee you your energy savings is more than your payments. But we didn't have any of those kind of projects that was worthwhile. So what we're doing is just taking the ones that make financial sense and proceeding with making those improvements. And the fact of it is the LED lights, just like with our street lights, is paying off the most for us, and that's what we're focusing on.
I remember a lot of discussion about pumps when we talked about this the first time. So they had no recommendations for pumps or sizing of pumps, efficiency of pumps?
They found no pumps that needed to be changed to be more energy efficient. There are more pumps. There are more efficient pumps, no doubt about that, than some of the pumps that we have. But the return wasn't there.
Right.
For them. Mm-hmm. They did find one variable frequency drive at Water Plant 3 that would pay itself back. However, the recent improvements we made to Water Plant 3 kind of negate that the use of that VFWs, the VFD.
Uh-huh.
So.
Okay.
We're not going to implement that piece.
I think that's significant since Siemens Alice is probably the largest multinational conglomerate maker of pumps in the world.
For them not to.
But they couldn't find any to sell us.
I think it says a lot about how the city has looked at efficiency, how council and staff have pushed towards making sure what we install, the projects we build, have a viewpoint that shows and fosters that. One of the other things I would like to add is by doing a lot of this work in-house, that wasn't even factored in to the Siemens you know, they really had it factored in to outsource all the improvements. So there'll be some savings there as well that's not even in the report.
Mm-hmm. Any other council discussion? Okay, thank you, Steve.
Thank you very much.
Agenda item number 2, a resolution approving the selection of Brown & Brown Insurance Incorporated as the agent of record for employee benefit services.
Brown & Brown is our current agent. We had been with them for 5 years now for the second go-around. And this is basically a continuation of that contract. We did go through the selection process. Brown & Brown actually was one of those that helped us with making huge improvements in our current plan. And they came in with a proposal that was $5,000 a year less than what we currently pay them, which we currently are paying them $75,000 a year, and they came in with $70,000. The selection committee unanimously recommended we continue with them for the next 3 years with an option of 2 1-year extensions.
Who does the county use for their insurance broker, do you know?
Bailey Group.
Bailey Group?
Mm-hmm. Council questions? Discussion? Mm-hmm. Agenda item number 3, an ordinance amending Chapter 2 Administration, Article 6, Retirement Division 2, Volunteer Firefighters Retirement System and Trust Fund, amending Section 2-549, Supplemental Benefit.
This should sound familiar. This had a typo in it. And the attorney that put this together had all these documents, and one of them had the wrong number. And just to be abundantly cautious, we're asking you to adopt the ordinance with the correct number.
All right. Council questions? Okay. Agenda item number 4, resolution approving price agreements with Harrell's LLC and Howard Fertilizer and Chemical Company, Incorporated, for various landscape chemicals for medians and park athletic fields.
This is our annual contract. We go out to bid, and it's actually with a couple of them because they give us different prices, and we pick the best price for whatever item.
And is this the same company we did business with last year?
I know we're doing Howard Fertilizer. I don't know about Pearl. Pearl is new. Carol is new.
Okay. Council questions? Okay, we're down with the fertilizer. Resolution approving piggybacking the contract between Seminole County and Trafficware Group Incorporated to purchase TS2 Type 6 traffic cabinets on an as-needed basis. This is agenda item item number 5.
This is just to have the contract so when people decide to drive off the road and hit one of our cabinets, or, which is actually more common, is when lightning decides to strike one of them and fry them, we can get it replaced quickly. We keep some of these, one or two of these, in stock at all times because of how quickly we need to turn it around.
So when somebody decides to play tag with one of our cabinets, do we get any remuneration?
We would go after the insurance, absolutely. Yes.
And are we successful?
Chris has given me this, which means yes sometimes and sometimes no. It depends on what kind of insurance they have. And
have we looked at the possibility of barricading them better than they are, if they are? What can we do to keep some nitwit from plowing into one?
I don't have an answer for you yet, but we'll look at it. You know, as far as putting bollards up or something.
We talked about that last year.
Yeah, we talked about it, but I don't know that we ever came up with any idea whether it'd be good, bad, or nothing.
But I think there might be some.
The thing of it is that if we're getting some of these hit by vehicles, and we're not recouping the cost of them from the insurance companies for whatever reason, then I think we should look at how much it would cost us to protect them and see if that cost compares favorably with what we're losing when they get wrecked.
But you also have to look at when you're protecting them, what kind of damage are you going to, what kind of damage are you going to cause?
Absolutely.
Anytime you put something solid close to the street, that's like all our signposts and even our light posts, et cetera, are all breakaways. So when they get hit, they aren't a solid structure. And what you're asking for us to do is put a solid structure out close to the street. And so that when that gets hit, then it becomes our fault.
No, I think what I'm asking for, Mr. Lannon, is I'm asking for a cost comparison with what it would cost to protect them compared with how much we're losing when we can't recoup the cost.
And what I'm saying, it's not a matter of protection, it's a matter of liability. Is that hitting that protection becomes then the city's fault that the impact was harder than it should have been.
And to put a sharper point on it, I think one of the issues would ultimately be in calculating the cost of the protection of the units, what type of materials would have to be used, what structure would have to be developed or engineered to protect our property, but at the same time not exposing us to greater liability. You know, when you on the interstate, you'll see a divider, and they've got all of those big containers to try to protect the motorists from driving right into them. I mean, those things are big, and they're designed in a certain way. There's a certain number of them, and then you need a certain amount of space to have all those dividers. That would be, I think, what would likely end up being in the calculus.
How many of these are we talking about?
One at every intersection with
the city. No. I mean, how many incidents?
We replace, on average, 4 a year. Okay. But once again, most of those are going to be lightning strikes.
Okay, so from vehicle, we're talking something to worry about.
One or two a year.
Okay, well, I agree with you, Steve, except that the money to replace them is tax money.
Yep.
When we do receive money back, if it is from a car accident, does it go back into this fund?
Yes.
Any other questions?
What is the contract for? I understand we're giving them money to provide us.
No, it's purchasing the cabinets and the equipment in the cabinets.
Okay,
but it's on an as-needed basis.
Okay, so this is the cost that's associated with this is a projected.
Right.
Okay.
And
right.
It's locked in with what Seminole County pays.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. If we don't have any problem, no lightning strikes, then our cost is zero.
Gotcha.
But this way, when we do need to go buy one, we know who we're going to go to and we can do it quickly at a set price.
Anybody in Florida has lightning rods? Where I come from, every house that was built in the last 100 years had lightning rods put into it. Yeah. I don't know if they work or not. All right. Agenda item number 7 is a budget presentation in as much
number
as...
Six.
You guys want to do 6? All right. Resolution approving piggybacking the contract between the state of Florida and Audio-Video Innovations for budgeted purchases of technology and communication supplies and maintenance.
This is the last of our capital budget. It's a replacement of our, exactly what it says, our IT stuff. We're timing this with the move into the new building. In fact, they've talked about having to, we will take that rack with us, etc. But but the old equipment that we've been putting off, we'll replace that and integrate it into our existing. So that's why this is coming at this time of the year when usually we do it towards the beginning of the year.
Okay. Council questions, comments? Now. Agenda item number 7.
You're
welcome.
Thank you.
A presentation of the fiscal year 2016 preliminary general fund budget and proposed millage rates, and this will be a condensed version because the mayor is not here. He's a voting member, so we will show the overview.
The
we'll talk about the schedule, but yes, when it comes to budget, I always like to have all five council members here for these type of discussions. So what this will be is an overview. We also provided you with some information. I think Chris sent out yesterday to you. Not looking for any detailed discussions today, but just kind of get the discussion started. And Lena will kick it off with the schedule, and we'll go from there.
Good. Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
This is our budget preparation timeline. As you know, we've been meeting with you, seems like almost every workshop the last couple months, just going through some presentations with you. And now here we are in July with our general fund overview. And, of course, our budget workshops will be beginning the next workshop.
I'm going to kick off this because this is really not so much the dollars, but some of the changes that we're doing. If you recall, when we had a couple of, retirement and resignation and some of our larger operations, I reorganized, in particular, tried to put all of our construction and capital improvements under one division, one department, instead of having it in two or three for efficiency, and then also broke out public works, streets, drainage, facilities, etc., from utility. So you always want your budget to reflect the organization. So we're also making changes in the budget to reflect exactly that. What that does is sometimes, and a good example is this one right on top, is by combining utility and stormwater, general construction under one, we have some general fund portions, but we also have stormwater and utility portion that goes into that one department. So that one department is about $1.5 million overall budget. But as you can see up there, each one of those funds contribute about $500,000 each. So if you look at the numbers, they look a little confusing, but that's one of the reasons why that it actually is a change in the organizational structure. The facility maintenance budget, this was actually something that Chris and Nestor came up with. I think it may have been Nestor's idea, but right now we have fleet maintenance. That is an internal service fund, which means each department pays for their fair share of the fleet maintenance budget operation. So it comes out of their budget, and it gets transferred into fleet maintenance, and it's a separate fund. What we historically have done is with facility maintenance, in other words, a utility has some repairs that we have to do at their facility, fire stations, etc., then that was coming out of the general fund. And what we are doing this year is in combining the fleet maintenance, and actually have a very talented supervisor, and putting him in charge of also facilities maintenance, so that our fleet and facilities maintenance will all be under one supervisor. It actually eliminates a supervisor position, someone that has left us, and makes it, in our opinion, more efficient, and then have the facility maintenance cost allocated just like we do fleet maintenance. So it's an internal service. So instead of having it come out of the general fund will pay dollars towards facilities maintenance just like all the other funds do. And so you're going to see some of those numbers look a little
What better. Methodology is being used to determine?
The same methodology that we used in the general fund. It was based on budget volume, essentially, by department.
Budget volume by department?
Right. So
for facilities?
The facilities budget is based on what we project the costs of the repairs and maintenance are.
Right.
And it was, in the past, been projected out by basically size of the budgets as a percentage of the whole. So if your budget was $30 million, you have more stuff, you would use, all in operating budgets now, you would use more of the facilities than someone who only had $2 million budget.
So facilities is not just lights and tiles and that kind of stuff. Facilities is what?
It's janitorial services, general repairs and maintenance, changing light bulbs, all of those things as it relates to city facilities.
Structures.
Painting, you know, like the facilities folks paint this room, you know, those kinds of things.
Uh-huh. And then is it a... Do you take a total facilities budget and determine a unit cost and then multiply it by the portion of their budget to come up with that number, or which way does it work? Does it work up or does it work down? You have a total facilities cost and then you work it down to...
We allocate the total facilities cost out to the various departments that benefit from the use of those facilities.
Mm-hmm. And we use the previous year's actual in order to come up with that. So we're not actually collecting from departments what we think the department will spend. Mm-hmm. We collect back what the department spent the previous year. And so this way we have an actual figure and not just a projected budget.
As a percentage of the previous budget.
Right.
Well, previous actuals.
Actuals, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay.
So I think the total was about $767,000 was their total actual for the previous year. Mm-hmm. So the remaining portion of that, the $276,000 is the general fund's share of it. The remainder of that is what the utility fund, stormwater, building, all of our other funds would share in that cost.
And what historically has happened is utility, building, all the other funds, their allocation was transferred into the general fund.
Right.
And then the general fund paid the actual cost. And what we are proposing this year is that the facilities maintenance be combined with the fleet maintenance fund. So now those other funds, instead of paying the general fund, will pay the maintenance fund. And the general fund will pay its fair share, which is about $276,000, will go into that. So the actual expenses coming out of the general fund for that operation is zero. You'll see it gets zeroed out. But there's a transfer to that to represent the same amount that they've been responsible for in the past.
I think it's important just to note that the facilities budget has always been allocated out mm-hmm. to all departments.
Okay.
It's just been accumulated in the general fund. Mm-hmm. So we're just taking that accumulation out of the general fund, setting up its own fleet facilities fund, mm-hmm. and just doing it. And part of that is just because it makes a lot of sense management-wise, and it really is an internal service, is really what that department is. The other part is, which we're going to have more discussions about, you know, we have a new city hall coming online, obviously, shortly. We've got renovations that we're considering for the community center, and there's been discussions about, well, do we put money aside for replacements on these new buildings? Do we start putting money aside for the eventual replacement of the roof of the new city hall? Do we put money aside for the eventual replacement of the air conditioning system in the new city hall? This kind of fund, similar to fleet, will help facilitate those discussions and allow us to do those accumulations. So there was multiple kind of steps involved in why we wanted to kind of separate this out as an internal service fund. But the departments individually right now are going to see the same costs that they always did.
Okay.
Are you promoting someone to fleet management? You said you had a person that was highly qualified.
No, we have a supervisor of fleet management now.
Yes.
And that person will be in charge of fleet and facilities management. Right now we have a separate supervisor in charge of facilities management. Nestor is actually proposing that two supervisory positions be eliminated and that they actually be, the reduced to equipment operators or maintenance workers.
So you're taking two jobs and combining them into one?
The supervisory portion of it, yes.
What happens to the one who isn't picked?
He's already gone.
terminated?
The position right now is vacant.
Okay, and is this, without getting into a lot of dirty laundry, is this the position that Tony Capella used to do?
No. His name is Ken Dawson. He recently decided to move on and do something else. Ken's been with us for a long time. It was just his decision. There's no dirty laundry with this one at all. But always encourage my directors and myself that when you have an opening, and particularly when Nestor just came in, and to take a look at what's the best way to manage the operation. And this was one that seemed to make a lot of sense. And then when dealing with the finance and how we could combine it with the internal services fund, it even made more sense. So
by reducing a salary position, you show a savings?
Yes.
Okay.
In this area.
All right.
Substantial savings.
How are we dealing with this move this year from this facility to City Hall? Because that includes a bunch of other buildings, right? That a lot of people are. Are we anticipating that cost to be down that first year?
Well, yeah. We won't have to pay rent any longer. We were paying about roughly $250,000 a year in rent. October is the only month that we would pay rent still for this facility. Mm-hmm. That'll be our last month. So there'll be roughly a $220,000 savings just in rent alone.
Okay. Where's the money for the move coming from? The physical move, moving.
Well,
My weekend.
I got my pickup truck running.
You get your pickup truck running. I got my two-wheeler.
Most of that we're going to do with our own crews.
Oh, okay.
We're not hiring construction people. A lot of the individual, and there's not a whole lot. IT is probably the one that has the biggest change as
most
far
complex.
as most complex. And things. Most of the rest of us is going to be pick up your furniture, plug and play. There's going to be new cubicles. We don't own the cubicles in the building.
Okay.
We don't have, because we are moving other people in, we don't have enough furniture, but any of the furniture that we can reuse, we're taking with us. So let's talk a little bit about process. This is just a good update, time to do that. We have a team that's looking at it. We're already encouraging people to
prepare
and get things cleaned up and have your fall cleanup going on before we move, so we don't take any more junk than we have to. And then we will move as much as we can Monday through Friday. As soon as we can start moving in. So if you have an operation that you can go ahead and move and not impact particularly customer service and operations, we will have our crews Monday through Friday during the regular work hours move as much as we can.
And where will these crews come from, Mr. Landon?
Public Works. Very likely, it hasn't been finalized, but very likely there will be a weekend that we end up...
a little overtime.
Yeah, and there would definitely be some overtime. But places like a lot of the IT stuff, customer service, answering the phones. Last time we did this, we actually shut down for, I think it was a Monday, it may have been a Friday, but we had a three-day weekend to get it done. Because this is going to be a lot more planned out, the last time we did it very quickly, we're hoping to do it in a weekend time frame, so that Monday morning we're go home from here Friday afternoon, and then you show up at work at the other place Monday morning, and we're back in operation. It will be anytime you move, there'll be some hiccups, but just.
So do you have a Gantt chart that lays out all the tasks that have to be done and puts a time to them?
I know they're working on it. The team is working on exactly all those things that have to happen.
Team, what team is that?
It's a City Hall team.
Okay.
That works on a variety of things like this.
Okay.
So
I mean, when I move, it's just you get up in the morning and grab the first thing you see and put it on the truck.
Well, you know, I'll go back to the rack back there. They've already talked about, okay, we need to break that down, and so can we do that before the last workshop in this room? And they're already having those kind of discussions of is there any way we can do something a little different for the audio, not have it re-recorded or streamed live, those type of things. I don't know the answer right now, and I don't know how critical that is, but there are some critical paths that you're going to have you know, things moved at a certain time. But there are a lot of those discussions happening right now.
Are you using critical paths to plan this?
Once again, you're getting into details that okay. I'm not that one well, doing.
You have no choice. Yeah. I mean, it's do or you can't miss.
Yeah,
you're right. See?
You know, it's like any other move, though. There's, you know, some things will go real smoothly, and then all of a sudden there'll be a hiccup. But we are planning far enough in advance. I think we're good. The cost, I mean, it's definitely going to be less expensive than the actual cost of rent. You know, mm-hmm. Will there be some additional costs on the new building? Yes. Will it be $250,000? No.
But will the cost of, is the cost to move from here to there already included in the City Hall price?
City Hall price, no. Not the actual, our moving.
Where is the cost?
It is the next year's budget, what little there is.
General fund?
It's spread, honestly, it's spread around, some of it's in public works. No slush funds. Some of it's in public works. You know, the hard costs are really just our labor costs primarily, you know, that we've already budgeted for next year in proposed budgets.
The rest of the kind of a summary, those are the major changes you'll see in the general fund. I just kind of wanted to highlight those that are really changes that reflect the organizational changes we did this year.
Quick question. Maintenance, is that a part-time maintenance worker and two equipment operators?
Okay, I haven't gotten down to that. Oh, do we have a question about the top two first?
Yeah.
I just want to know how many equivalent people.
Those are the changes to the in community development. That's the changes to the budget, right? But the organizational structure includes building and planning, plus engineering, stormwater engineering, and utility development construction management.
Right. The top one, which is the construction, basically our capital improvement program, doesn't impact the building fund.
Right, from a budgeting standpoint.
Standpoint.
Okay, but organizationally, that's all that one.
Yes.
Part.
Yeah.
Okay.
In other words, this is a new division within community development.
Gotcha.
And it eliminated the engineering and stormwater department, if you recall.
Right.
And so now we have the division of construction management and engineering.
Okay.
That is within community development, along with building code and planning. Any other questions of the reorging? The other things we always highlight are any new positions and then the pay plan that impact employees. We are proposing in this budget 4.5 full-time equivalencies, if you will. You could say it's only 3 or 4, excuse me, but I'll tell you why. Park maintenance, obviously with our new parks out there and Holland Park coming online and the new in Long Creek, even the maintenance now at City Hall, the outside maintenance of City Hall, we will take on. And so we're
And you're saying that's a part-time position?
We're proposing 2 full-time positions. And 1 part-time position. The part-time position will be an evening hour type position for maintenance of restrooms and those type. They think would be more efficient if we had somebody that came in late afternoon and worked beyond the normal work hours. But that's in public works and our park maintenance. And then also with increases in recreational programs, and we're seeing more and more activities there. I'm proposing to approve Luann's request for an additional recreation supervisor.
to help with recreational.
Would that be like to replace Lauren, who left?
Lauren was a recreational supervisor. But
so you're replacing her?
We're replacing her and adding another Lauren.
Okay, so these are all new positions. None of these are replacement positions.
No, these are the in the budget for the general fund. This represents the new additional positions we're proposing this year. Okay? And then the last one is this year, because of some needs, and opportunity with finding somebody who fit very well, we hired a part-time person to help out with contract and risk management safety program. Diane Farino, you might know, is a one-person show. And with all the contracts and our emphasis on risk management right now, we hired a part-time individual, and we're proposing that go full-time come October 1. This is one of those that was a part of the major cutbacks during the hard times. And really need some assistance in that area.
Do you have a job description for this position?
Yes.
Where do I go to see it?
What's that?
Where should I go to see it?
Wendy would have it for you.
All right.
It's already out there. Questions about that? And then pay plan. We have two things we always do in our pay plan each year. One of them is try to make sure that our starting salaries stay competitive. This year we're proposing a 2% increase on starting salaries as of January 1st. And then adjust the schedule by those dollar amounts accordingly. And then our performance-based, which is actually the individual employee pay raises, and it can be anywhere from 0 to 5% based on performance, and we're proposing that be an average for each department of 3%.
What about hourly employees? Are you proposing any?
Same thing. They would all.
Because it says salary.
Salary, wage adjustment.
Okay.
Terminology, but
and when you say performance based, I interpret that as saying, I work for you. You give me a list of goals, and if I meet and exceed my goals, I'm eligible for a performance base of up to 3%.
No, 5%. up to 5%.
Okay,
this is the average of 3%.
This is what you're budgeting.
Yes.
Okay. Did we do that in the last fiscal year?
Yes. This is our typical pay plan.
And of our employees that work for the city, approximately how many or what percent of them received a performance-based increase?
I think all of them received something or close to it.
Okay.
So, and I should stress that this past couple of years, 4 or 5 years probably, it's been a 2% average.
Mm-hmm.
So this year we're proposing to go up to a 3% average, which is more reflective. So basically what this means for employees, typical employee, most employees are going to see about a 4% pay raise with this proposal.
And you want that because, you know, you don't want zeros.
Well, I mean, we're already experiencing some turnover as a result of this. So there's two things. You always want to have your starting salaries be competitive so that you can attract quality people. And then you can't leave them at their starting salaries, or else you get people who've been here for years and they're making the same amount as someone new, and then that's what the performance base. And then you try to have it so that it's not just automatic. It is actually based on, you know,
based on realistic performance goals,
right?
Especially the ability to work within your budget,
right? And then that's exactly why we do this, so that they know what their budget is, and that they have X number of dollars, if you will, in this case, percentage of what they can provide with. They don't have to go up to the 3%. They can't go over the 3%.
Well, we don't want them to stay at the 3% just because that's their budget limit. Right.
No.
You understand what I'm saying? I mean, if their budget shows, if they have a 3% budget,
right,
but they have an exceptional crew, and everybody's getting a 4% raise or 5%,
No, it would. It would. They have. You might say, they take 3% of their salaries.
Yeah.
And that's a pot of money they have, a dollar amount, and then they decide how that is divided up amongst their employees based on performance. So your top performers should be making more, and your average people and performers that need a little help would make less.
But it should show up if your budget is a good working budget, and I like to think that ours is. In fact, I do believe ours is. Then I can say to you, okay, you are making this amount of money, but because of the performance that you turned in and the job you did for the city, you saved this amount of money, so I'm going to give a piece of that to you.
Well, now you're talking bonuses and those type of things.
When you talk performance-based, that's what you're talking about. You're saying that you did better than I would have expected you to do, so I'm going to give you more money.
Yeah. Okay, but it's not based on the savings you made. It's based on your productivity.
No, but I would expect that you should, that you could show a return somewhere within your finances that because this department here did an outstanding job, mm-hmm. that we as a city are reflecting a more positive financial profile.
Yes. Easier said than done when you're just doing customer service and those type of things.
Well, setting goals is not easy.
Yep.
But the goals should reflect that if you meet these goals, we as a city are better off because of it.
Right.
Well, Mr. McGuire, the performance-based increases, they range anywhere from literally, some people are close to zero and some people are... 3-4%. It really depends on individual performance.
Yeah, I've walked down that road. I know what you're going through.
So this is, unless you have other questions, kind of a highlight of some of the changes and that we are proposing in the general fund. Nothing major. And then if we move on, you'll see kind of the summary and of the dollars. And now I turn it back over to Chris and Lena or who.
So does this mean that Mr. Reichman still has to drive a Kia?
Nissan.
He upgraded.
It's another part of Korea.
We've talked to him about getting a Yugo.
A Yugo. Yeah.
A Yugo. What a great idea.
They're tough taskmasters.
What we did here, just kind of for clarification purposes, is we broke out on the second line the engineering/construction management engineering reorg. So just so we can kind of see how the rest of the budget is 2015 versus proposed 2016. So you can see our 2015 budget is $28.7 million, not including engineering, construction and engineering. We're proposing $29.275. That's about a $500,000 increase or a 1.9% increase over 2015. With the construction management and engineering, we have our current general fund engineering budget, which is a 458. As we saw on the previous page, the new division is 1.559 minus the utility portion and the stormwater portion, so that just for apples to apples comparison purposes, the overall increase that we're looking at right now in the proposed budget is just under $650,000, or 2.2%. Same thing with the FTEs. Jim outlined the 4.5 FTEs proposed, and the per 1,000 of population, we remain pretty flat on that particular metric. The very bottom is the 2015 original budget, 29,189. The estimated budget is a little bit higher by about $90,000. Two big items that were not considered in the original budget is we have two grants that we received, a FEMA grant for $249,000 worth of fire department equipment and a $27,000 training grant, which we've talked about. Both of those are the primary drivers of the change from the original budget to the estimated 2015.
Chris, the full-time equivalents Do those numbers include fringe?
Full-time equivalents, those are actual body counts.
Okay.
Actual body counts.
So of the additional bodies, if you will, for the budget we're proposing, how many of them are part-time?
Just the one. Just the part-time maintenance worker we discussed.
Okay. So that person is not eligible for fringes?
There are limited holiday and vacation amounts, depending on the number of hours worked.
Hospitalization.
But the medical insurance and things like that would not necessarily be available. Okay. Again, it depends, especially with all the new Obamacare laws and things, it depends on how many hours they wind up working. If it's like 20 hours, let's say, there would be very, very limited fringe benefits for that person.
Okay.
This, although it's kind of hard to read, this is in the link that I had sent out last night for all the council members, and we're going to, if you can keep that link handy, because we're going to continue to put all of our kind of backup worksheets in there throughout the budget process for council review, because we kind of talk at a little higher level when we have these discussions. But it's a little difficult to read, but basically this is by division, all the different changes, this original budget, projected budget, and 2016 requested amount that we looked at that was summarized on the previous page.
So, not that you can read it, but so when you do look at it, for those that, this is it, first column is original budget, so that's where the city council approved. Then at this time of year, we do projections. Now that we're getting close to the end of the year, where do we think we really will be? And that's the next column. And then the third column represents the difference, whether we think we're going to be lower or higher, and then the percentage, comparing those two columns of original budget versus proposed budget. Then this column, which becomes the fifth column, is the proposed budget for those same divisions for this coming fiscal year. So, and just so you know, when you adopt a budget, you will adopt both the projected amount for 15, the revised amount, and the proposed amount for 2016. The last two columns represent the difference budget to budget. In other words, the 2015 original budget to the proposed 2016 budget. Dollar amount versus the percentages. So, and then this is where you see down the totals down at the bottom that Chris talked about. Now, some of these, like this 6%, is not realistic because you see the revenue going up also, and we've just reflected the fact that we're having some transfers in that actually counter. In particular, this high item right here, which is right there, the construction management. So, with the changes, it makes some of these numbers a little confusing because the transfers in go into revenue and don't come out of expenditures.
How do you account for the negative, if you will, for planning of $193,000? When construction is going up, I mean, what's that come?
Because there are two people currently being paid out of planning that are now in construction management and engineering. So it is part of this cost here in construction management actually came out of planning.
That goes to a question, if you can add it, which is with Mr. Guires, is where can I determine what caused the changes, positive or negative? Like, for instance, there's the city manager's got minus 3%. So looking at the budget, I saw it just was something, there's a reduction in health. But what was that? Was that we're not giving you health, or the health costs were, what I mean is, there a place do we have that somewhere, or would I need to ask that question for each one of these? I got to ask the question for each one of these.
A lot of times you're going to have to ask the question. We once again,
the next workshop, we're going to go through each one of these.
But I think Mr. Nobile's point is well taken. It would be good if anything that showed a variation that we would consider significant have some kind of a flag note on it.
Right, and that's what we do. When we go through each one of them, and let's stay with planning, going down $192,000, we will explain why that is going down. Okay. This is intended just to be a summary right now.
Gotcha.
We've tried to give you some of that background that you could be looking at. Would always encourage you to come see Lena and Chris with questions, or you can come see me, but they have better answers. They know it better than I do. But when we go through the more detail, we will go through each one of these departments and talk about it.
So I don't have to bother Chris. It's going to be in the next one anyways, right?
I would encourage you to bother Chris ahead of time if you start looking at questions so that you can prepare for those details. That's what we're trying to do, just give you some general stuff now. You have a couple of weeks to look it over, ask questions. And
so that's a pizza meeting.
Probably, yes.
Chris does like pizza, yeah. So okay. You're on to something.
Yeah. I like
good pizza. Good pizza.
And realize that this is just general fund, and then 2 weeks after that, we'll do our proprietary funds and some of the others. So there'll be a couple of pizza meetings coming up. Right now, we're trying to do this general overview. The other thing in the total revenue, you actually see that we're projecting revenue to be slightly lower than projected at the end of last year. In other words, we're about $13,000 under budget in revenue. I will tell you, a good majority of that is going to be in the golf course. So, which you don't see the detail. We just gave you the summary. So.
But it's out there.
It is. We do have the.
It's in the link.
Right. Okay. Next.
Again, we looked at this at our last meeting. Just kind of a reminder of our millage rate history, where we've been, property values. Again, our from our 2008 high, we're in 2015 a little over 44% less than we were in 2008. Our fiscal year 2016 taxable value, we have the official numbers, 4.142 billion, which is a 6.42% increase, and if I remember correctly, it was $63 million of that was new construction value.
Probably should highlight at this time that I should have done that in my introductory comments. Now that we're getting into the millage rate, this is something that will be on your agenda next week at the business meeting, because at this point you do have to set what we call the trim rate. And Chris has talked about that in one of his presentations, which is in essence the maximum millage rate that you can adopt. And then that's what's advertised, and that's what goes out in the notices and everything. And that has to be adopted at your next business meeting. It is a little strange process in the fact you have to set that maximum rate before you actually have all of the budget information. So Chris will talk a little bit about how we operate in that. But that is, just keep in mind, something you will have to take action on.
So just kind of a reminder, as we talk about millage rates, our 2014 millage rate, 4.2450. The next three rates are all calculated based on the state trim rules. Our rollback rate, just under 4.06. That would get us approximately the same amount of tax dollars as the previous year's dollar for dollar. There's what's called the majority vote rate, which with a simple majority of city council can go up to 6.58 for the millage rate. And then there's a two-thirds vote rate, which would be 7.23 or 7.24. Again, these are set out by the state trim laws that say, hey, these are the levels that you can go to with this amount of voting by city council. The city council has those options. It's not unlimited what city council can do as far as military options go.
Well, I always like to dare you to increase the price. property taxes up to that year. Just kidding.
Well, if we do, we'll have to say, well, we can't afford to pay our city manager the exorbitant salary.
I suspect we don't have a city manager to pay.
This just kind of is a quick grid. The very top is what we're doing this year. Our 2015 millage rate. We're generating about $16 million in property taxes. $300,000 goes to stormwater. The balance goes into the general fund. At the rollback rate, we would generate a little bit more, but a little over $250,000 in additional tax revenue. That primarily has to do with the new construction values that were not on the tax roll previously. What we're proposing, which we've done in the past, is to say, to give City Council some kind of working room here, because we're really not at the point where we're done with the general fund budget or any of the budgets, is to propose to keep the millage rate flat. By doing that, it gives us an amount of money to work with, and any amount between, basically any amount 4.2450 or less. But at 4.2450, it would generate, if we were to stay at that rate, it would generate about $1 million more in property taxes citywide based on the increased values within the city. It's primarily based within the increased value. And you can see that the tax amount would go up by about 6%, which is what about the taxable value has gone up. The thing to keep in mind on an individualized basis, homesteaded folks, their taxable value can only go up a maximum of 3%. So even at the same trim rate, if you were paying $300 a year for your city taxes, the most your taxes probably would go up would be about $9 or $10 a year in this scenario. And that's a year, $9 or $10 a year, I wanted to say that.
Chris, in the county's budget, the sheriff has gone to the county and asked for a significant increase in his budgeted allocation. Have we any reason to think that our bill from the sheriff is going to be any significant number? Have you already included that in?
That's a landing question, but yes. Met with the sheriff a couple of times about this. He is asking for an increase, but it's consistent with our agreement. Right now what we have is, and we'll show you the detail when we get into this, but they give us the average cost for a deputy, for a corporal, for the commander.
Right.
And so we have actual costs. And then we say, okay, how many of those, I think it's 25 deputies. So then we take that average cost times 25, and that's how we get our contribution to the sheriff's program. And so he's proposing pay raises like everybody else now.
Sure.
And so those costs are going up. Our contract says the most we have to go up is 3%. Some of the changes, et cetera, the actual cost for some of his supervisors has gone down a little bit. And in talking to the sheriff, what we've talked about is a 6% increase for the deputies, which will represent for us a total of about, if I recall, a 3.7% increase. And I think considering the recent history and everything, that's a reasonable amount, and I'm supporting that and presenting that to you. So you'll have an opportunity to take a look at that. No additional number of deputies, no fewer deputies, but there will be additional cost per deputy in the proposed budget.
What kind of dollars does that translate to?
It was $96,000. It was in that other chart.
Yep. You can look at, when you look at law enforcement, go back here, right. Blue sheet. If you look at law enforcement, law enforcement.
You would just start with your
right in the middle.
$96,854. Okay. Once again, none of this is final.
I understand, but we have factored it into our proposed budget.
Yes.
That's the main thing, because I don't want to have a surprise. And, we forgot to tell you that the sheriff is asking for this, and we hadn't put that in.
Well, and I can tell you that I have not
I've had discussions with the sheriff. I haven't showed him my final proposal. He's out of town right now. And so it may change when it comes to you, but that's one of the reasons we're having some flexibility between now and the time. So I want to stress, none of these numbers are final. And had very positive conversations with the sheriff at this point, though, so I think we can work something out.
But after next Tuesday, that number is maxed.
Maxed.
Right. And we can always go backwards from there, and we always have.
Yes, and I can tell you the round figure. See, it's realizing that your general fund is about 30 million, and only 16 of that is property tax. Mm-hmm. Okay, or actually less than that because we're talking about between 15 and 16. So we're still getting in other projections for all the other revenue with fees and the like. And that has an impact on all the numbers also. Based on preliminary projections, right now, we approximately $300,000 more than what we need. And what we do have done historically is that we don't try to set the millage rate and then work up to it. We set what we think is appropriate expenditures for city council's goals and priorities and our operations. And then we have a little formula that says, okay, to do that, this is what we have to have in millage rate, considering all the other revenue sources. And then that's where that almost always comes in lower than the trim rate. But if you all have talked about some other programs you may want to add to it, you could do that with staying within the trim rate, or you can obviously reduce here and add there. You know, but those are the kind of conversations that are headed your way. But we feel like this gives you enough flexibility. We see no reason why you want to increase the tax rate this year. And I think there's enough room there. You very likely will be able to reduce it again this year.
So with that note, that's the maximum millage rate that we're proposing to put into the resolution to bring before City Council at the next meeting, which would go out on trim notices. To keep it flat and still have some working room. So what's next? Again, next a week from today would be the adoption of the maximum millage rate and transmitting that off to the county for addition to the trim notices. We'll come back and go through the detail of the general fund budget workshop on the 28th. In August, we'll go through proprietary funds, the special revenue and capital funds. We'll go through the entire budget one final time, and August 25th to kind of get everything finalized, nail down what our final millage rate will be, and then that would go to the public hearings, which right now are tentatively scheduled for the 9th and 23rd, which is a Wednesday, and they would both be at 5:05 p.m. at the community center. That's where we're going next.
Any other council questions on the budget? Okay. That concludes our business. We will move to discussion by the City Council of matters not on the agenda. Mr. DiLorenzo.
No.
Okay, thank you.
Bill.
One question. I got an email. I was looking at the budget, then I read an email where we put a lot of money in the golf course, and I got an email saying that the golf course is not in good condition. I think you got it also.
Yeah. Yep.
Are we dealing with that?
Yes.
Okay. So
I've been dealing with it. It's
because that was one of the things we put all this money in, right, to make it
yes
pristine.
Once again, go out and every month go through. There have been, in our opinion, significant improvements.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to see there's some capital improvements. Things like the bunkers have to be redone.
Yeah.
And some of it is just a matter of we have to put some reinvestment into the facility.
Yeah.
And you're going to see some capital improvements for that this year.
Okay.
And we're holding their feet to the fire stronger than we have before with a review of both the facilities and the operations, et cetera.
because if the facility goes downhill, Gauffler won't come back, and why are we doing this? Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Good.
Mrs. Shipley.
I do have something. Currently, we allocate $30,000 to the Arts Foundation, and what I would like to propose is that we do... I originally had said meet them with the $150,000 per year, kind of match what they were giving on the budget. But if we did $50,000 3 years, and which would bring it would make it $80,000 we were giving, it would only be $1 per person. And I think that the Arts Foundation, kind of like the soccer fields and all the other places that we have that bring in entertainment and bring in events, I think would be just as good to bring in money into this area, as well as restaurants in Flagler and hotels in this area. So that's what I'm proposing. I think that we have a youth orchestra that's big. We put a lot of time, and it's great for the community. And let's give them some place that they can actually play. We got rained out for symphony. We had to go to another place to do the symphony, the picnic in the pop with the pops. And I think this would solve that problem too. The graduations, the school board spends money on graduation locations every year. And they could do graduations on this place too. We could have everything that involves this city done in this place for $1 a person. So.
Really, you're talking about budget conversations, mm-hmm. and I can tell you right now the proposed budget is consistent with last year, $30,000. Mm-hmm. That is part of our cultural arts grants, which is different than construction. If you want to support their proposal for construction, I would suggest that be kind of separate from. So you could add $50,000, your proposal would be adding $50,000 to that to make it $80,000, but we would probably split that out, one for the grant program and one for the actual improvement program. You don't have to, but that would be our suggestion. And then when 2 weeks from now, when we get into this, that's, you know, it's one of those things that you all will have to decide as to how much you want to plug into that program. Right now, I can tell you that the proposed budget is consistent with city's council direction that's been in the past, and that is $30,000. It was increased last year, I believe, from 20 to 30.
25 to 25 30.
This is a little different, though. And you're right. I think what we need, what we're looking at, is an outdoor facility, mm-hmm. that phase one is already in. The permitting is passed, they're ready to go. Phase two is putting a roof over an outdoor stage. Mm-hmm. That construction, to me, is very conducive to what we want to do as a city. One of the things we have to start looking forward is, hopefully, Central Park area starts getting filled with buildings. Mm-hmm. And then we won't have a place to, for our outdoor facilities, our yeah. feasts and, that would make a great place for that. I look at this as a big investment in our community. Like Ms. Shipley said, we do an investment in a lot of things, golf, tennis, sports. This would give us a little diversity in that, but it still benefits the whole city. So I would really like to see that, where we can discuss it as a whole and make a decision.
That's, our proposal, that's why we said we wanted to make sure you had some flexibility,
yeah.
in the dollars. And, so you have those kind of flexibility. All city council have to say is add that to it, and then we will do it. But
so there'll be a workshop? Then we can bring it up.
It would have happened today, minus the mayor.
Right.
We would have,
right. And that's, but that's why I like all five members there,
yeah.
so that you can have those discussions.
Okay.
But, the time frame doesn't, if mayor can't make it 2 weeks from today, we still got to move forward, or else we won't meet our deadlines, with legal deadlines. But yes, next workshop, when we get into detailed budget, make sure that we highlight for you what we currently do, and then that would be time to talk about it. If you want, if you start getting into some major dollars, then we need to talk about moving it over to capital. And in fact, Chris may want to put it as part of your capital budget versus your operating budget when you're talking about actual construction. We can talk, you know, that's just details as to how we accomplish this. As I understand the program, though, it won't be a city project. It will still be the Art Foundation project. It would be a matter of us contributing to their project as another grant.
So I think we'll benefit from it, though. I think we'll contribute to them, and then in the long run, it'll be great for us.
Yeah, it would be a, but I'm saying it'd be a grant kind of thing versus our actual construction project.
I would like to just throw out just the thought. We thought that the fathers of the city before us thought that the addition of the golf course and the tennis center would be a great thing for the city, and it's a money pit. My only concern about what the Art League wants to do is, am I going to have to watch them come every year with their hat in their hand for more money, and it becomes another golf course? Because I think that if we had it on the table today, that do we want to purchase this golf course? I'm not sure the answer would be the same as it was 10 years ago.
But it could be just who's managing the golf course, and I think you've got great people behind the Arts Foundation.
Well, but the point I think the mayor brought is what we have to change our view of the golf course is it's not a business entity. It's just another amenity. You say the same thing about the police force. It's a money pit. But we need them. You know, they benefit. Well, so we have to have other things. We have to put money in that benefit the community.
And to build the fields with the sporting events, that was kind of iffy. You didn't know if you were going to get all this. You know, we get a lot of people in from that we probably didn't expect to get.
But you're right. And the good thing, though, is that it would be a yearly yes or no. You know what I mean? It wouldn't be like the golf course that once we bought it, we own it. This would be.
It's also a little difficult to compare to the golf course because the golf course was not. It was not operational. It was the same problem we're having at Palm Harbor.
Matanzas.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It went more to the community than just the running of a golf course. I mean, I think it was. I wasn't involved in that decision either, and. You know, from a financial point of view, it wasn't great, but it was a larger decision. It was a community decision
And I agree with everything that we're saying here, except when I talk to citizens in my district at homeowners associations or community watches, there is one recurrent theme that I've heard for 3 years, you know, and that's the golf course being an albatross hanging around our necks. I don't want to get into another one. That's all I'm saying. Not saying it would, not saying it wouldn't. I'm saying it's something to think
about.
Well,
I guess if this was to go through and if we were to help them achieve their goal of having a facility.
Sure.
It could also, from our point of view, it could just be that. It could just be contributing those dollars. And if it failed, we still own the land. We lease the land. That doesn't necessarily mean we have to take over the operations.
You're right, Jason. But the other side of that coin is if you're going to give the taxpayers money to a private organization that's not part of the city government, if you're going to do it for them, are you going to do it for Mr. Nobile when he wants to build a gun range? You know?
I think so.
Enough said. Something to think about. All right. Anything else, Mr. Shipley?
No, that's it.
You're going to bring that back up in 2 weeks, right?
Yes.
Or 2 weeks.
And we'll see about getting on the agenda. The only thing I want to say is that the Tourist Development Council is not meeting tomorrow. We could not come up with a quorum, so the meeting's been canceled. More to happen on that later. The TDC is in a flux right now. Discussion by the city attorney of matters not on the agenda.
A couple items. First of all, I sent to all of you a little while ago a general summary of the recent decision from the United States Supreme Court on Galton signs. And it was, the name of the case was Reed versus Town of Gilbert. It's an Arizona town, small Arizona town. And what it doesn't say is it's Pastor Reed. And the reason I'm pointing that out is because I think that's important to understand the facts. Because facts played a really big role in the decision that the Supreme Court made. And the decision that the Supreme Court made affects not just the city of Palm Coast, although it doesn't affect us that much, but it affects every city in the United States of America, because every city in the United States of America regulates signs. And this Supreme Court case said a lot about how cities can regulate signs. And this one plaintiff, Pastor Lee, was about a church. And specifically, as I mentioned, as I said in the email that I sent to you, a little memo, Pastor Reed was upset because the town of Gilbert had code-enforced him in his church because they had directional signs to their church on the weekends to get folks to their services on Sunday. And he said, well, wait a minute, you're code-enforcing me, but there's these other types of temporary signs other than directional signs, and you're regulating them differently as far as the size of those signs and where they can be and how long they can be. And he hired a lawyer, and the lawyer said, well, wait a minute, that I'm going to argue to a judge that you're regulating content. And I'm sure all of you have heard me say before, or other attorneys say, that one of the things you have to be careful with the regulation of signs is you've got to stay away from the regulation of content, because then you're dealing with for speech, because that's obviously what signage is, it's speech. And there's these different standards for review, legal different standards for review that courts apply. And if you're regulating time, place, and manner of signage, then it has a lower standard. In other words, the test that the government has to show to regulate time, place, and manner, you don't have to, it's a lower bar to get over to be able to, because you're not regulating speech per se, you're regulating aesthetics, and those are the important governmental interests. You're regulating public safety, traffic, and things like that. But when you get into content, that's when the courts say, well, wait a minute, you've got to have a real important, compelling, significant governmental interest if you're going to start regulating the content of speech. And historically, up until this one case, until Pastor Reed got involved, and if you look at almost any sign code in any city in the United States of America, it made distinctions between temporary signs. And it wasn't based upon their content per se, it was based upon the purpose. What did they do out there, these signs, these temporary signs, real estate signs, political signs, directional signs, yard signs, garage sale signs? I mean, and if you look at any city, they regulated these different signs differently because they had different purposes. And I would submit to you that when you look at our code and other codes, there was a good reason why they regulated these different temporary signs differently, because they had different purposes. And so they were different kind of signs. And there were good public reasons, public purpose reasons why you would want to regulate them differently, a political sign versus a directional sign versus a garage sale sign versus realty signs. They all could be regulated to achieve the governmental interests of aesthetics as well as traffic safety and that sort of thing. Well, in this particular instance, the Supreme Court said, no, the only way you can actually determine purpose for these temporary signs is you've got to read them. You've got to see what the sign says in order to tell whether it's a real estate sign versus a political sign versus a directional sign versus a garage sale sign. You've got to see what the sign says. And so the courts, for the first time as to these temporary signs, and that's what this case is about, it's about temporary signs. So I think that's important to say. It doesn't deal with pole signs or it doesn't deal with billboards or anything like that. It only deals with temporary signs, but it is a difference in the way that the Supreme Court, for the first time, is looking at how local government cities can regulate signage on a temporary sign. And it basically concluded, the Supreme Court concluded, that if you have to read the content of a temporary sign, then you're going to have to support those content regulations with under a strict scrutiny. You're going to have to show that you had a compelling interest to protect if you're going to regulate the content. And in this case, the Supreme Court found that the town of Gilbert did not meet that test. All right. So, as you can imagine, in my world, you know, you get the blogs about garbage rates and utility rates and golf courses and things like that. Well, in my world, the blogosphere is going crazy over this case, and there's a lot of talk about it. In fact, Katie and I, my boss and I, went down to FMAA for 4 days last week, and it was about 300 city attorneys there, and that, as you can imagine, is a big part of the conversation. So obviously, we've already looked at all of our city's codes, and we're doing what we need to do to make the changes necessary. I will tell you that what everyone has concluded from everyone I've talked to is that, you know, we're going to do what we need to protect our cities, but we need to tell our cities that what had been fairly black and white is now less black and white. So what we're going to do is we're going to be conservative, we're going to be proactive, and we're going to protect the cities from any claims that we're violating people's free speech rights. And the place we start with that, the place we start is working with your planning department and your to look at your sign code, to make some changes to the findings and the preambles, and look obviously very closely at the regulations of your temporary signs, but also work with your code enforcement department to make sure that they are going to code enforce signage in a way that meets the spirit, if not the letter, of this decision, so that the city of Palm Coast does not face claims brought by churches or politicians or real estate folks or people that want to have garage sales and so on and so forth. So that's
Mr. Rashman, do we have any history as far as citizens saying that the city has stepped on their First Amendment rights?
Oh, God, when it comes to political season,
well,
between the county and
I don't
the
know
city.
That it's legally, whenever we have elections, there's always a ruckus. As you remember, there was a pretty huge policy discussion several years ago about weekend snipe signs and real estate signs on the weekend and
right.
In the right-of-ways, and what can we do to regulate those? And arguably open house signs, that's a temporary sign. So we're going to have to, there's going to be, arguably, if you want to be extremely conservative, if this council, along with any other city council and city commission in the United States of America, want to be extremely conservative in how to react to the Supreme Court case, you're going to have to make changes. Everybody's going to have to make changes in how they regulate temporary signs. And the conclusion that we reached last weekend is that is not going to be a popular discussion, because you're going to have to avoid looking at common sense. You're going to have to throw that away.
No, we didn't. I didn't swear it.
Okay.
Yes, but you did as soon as you became a politician.
But do you understand what I'm saying? That's what the Supreme Court ruling, if you want to put it in a nutshell, I mean, and in the concurring opinion, Justice Kagan said that. She said, what we've done today, if you read the opinion and you read Justice Kagan, she says, what we've done today is taken with one swipe, eliminated all of these rational, logical policy decisions that local governments have made with regard to how they regulate their aesthetics, how they regulate their traffic safety and other things. And now, I think she said, we're going to be the Supreme Court of sign regulation, because this is going to prompt more and more challenges to sign codes based upon content. But we're not going to allow the city of Palm Coast to be the test case for that. We're going to work with your code enforcement and with your policy staff and do what's necessary to make sure that we don't face these challenges. We're going to use common sense, Mr. Vice Mayor. When I say we, I mean staff and lawyers and you. And we're going to try to be as proactive as we possibly can, given that what the Supreme Court has recently done is created a more difficult, complicated regulatory environment. In something that is highly emotional and highly controversial in the first place, which is the regulation of signage, political, commercial, residential, free speech, all of that, very, very, you know, something that's near and dear to everyone's hearts.
I want to clarify part of this, so is we're talking about signs on private property, not on public right-of-way.
Correct.
You know, and that. Because what you hear about the most are the signs on public right-of-way, the garage sale signs, the realtor signs, et cetera. That's why, you know, when we get the question, well, can't we allow realtor sign for open houses on the weekend?
Not anymore.
We never have allowed them.
We never did, but now you certainly can.
Yeah, right.
Because you have to read it. I like how you put that. You would have to read it
right.
to find out if that was there at the right time.
And that's what, it's really kind of always been that way, but this clarifies it even more. But that's what we've always said. If the code officer has to read it in order to determine whether he picks it up or not, we just black can't do that. And so what we've said is that because of that, you can have thousands, and we saw that, of all sorts of things out there in the public right-of-way.
In the public right-of-way.
If we were allowed one type, we'd have to allow all of them.
Okay. Right.
But what we also have to be careful about is regulating signs on private property.
Right. Not even your private. So if I put a sign on his property to say garage sales this way, that would fall under that?
Now, how does that work?
One
of the concurring opinions, and again, I'm doing the best I can to interpret the United States Supreme Court, which is never easy. Okay, but one of the concurring opinions, and Judge Alitos, who says what the majority is not doing today is dealing with off-site signage. On-site versus, remember now, think about it. Think about how counterintuitive that is. How do you know if something's on-site versus off-site?
Depends on who put it there, right?
Well,
how can you depend on who put it there?
How do you determine that? What do you look at? See, but the Supreme Court said in their concurring opinions, well, we're not regulating that today.
So they're not regulating off-site signs.
That's what the Supreme Court decision says.
So I have a house for sale.
Because that's billboards.
I put the signs on the house for sale, but not up the block saying, go this way.
Right. So
unless I get permission from all those people.
See, you can do that today.
Exactly. Right.
You know, and just like, you can put a boat for so-and-so, open house, puppies for sale, whatever, and that is allowed in your front yard.
Okay.
With certain conditions, but those conditions have nothing to do with what it says.
Correct.
It may be the size.
Right.
Yeah.
Location,
those type of things.
Numbers.
But we can't look at it and say, no, puppies for sale isn't okay. House for sale is okay.
Right.
Because at that point, we read it to determine whether or not it's okay. If you put a sign out that's, 500 square feet.
Then we can say no.
Then we can say no. You can say whatever you want on that, but it has to be a certain size. Is that helpful?
Yes. So are we changing it so that we are not going to allow anything with wordage on it? We're not changing any codes here. We're just being stricter with the codes that we have.
We're not there yet.
The code regarding signs on public right-of-way won't change.
Right.
Because
right
now it's
none.
You can have none.
Right.
And this basically supports the fact that you either have to allow all or none.
Right.
As far as private property, we're in the review process to make sure that we don't have something in there that says, okay, this type of temporary sign is okay, but this one's not on your own property. Because if we do have that, which isn't that uncommon, because, this is a temporary sign for a special event, and this is a temporary sign for a weekend event.
I'm going to tell you, if you look at any city codes on the regulation of signs, they regulate temporary signs. And they regulate them differently. I don't care where you go.
That's right. We allow political signs, but they have to be removed 15 days after the election. That's different from any other sign that we have.
Which is consistent with other cases that have
come
down.
But I could now, you're saying, put a business sign in front of my house. It conforms to the regulations, and I pull it out once a week just to see.
It sounds like you probably could, if you can put a sign there that says house for sale.
Right.
That you can say, advertise your business.
Joe's Plumbing.
No.
Well, not necessarily, because the Supreme Court said that would be an off-site sign.
If it's on your own property and your business is located.
If your business is located on your property, but if you've got a 7-Eleven, you own a 7-Eleven, you probably, we can still regulate the sign for the 7, advertising sign for the 7-Eleven on your home.
You're one of those rotten attorneys that works out of their home. I mean, you put a sign up front that says attorney
at
law.
So you're saying there's some attorneys that aren't rotten?
Only those that work
out. He's not saying that at all. Okay. Just want to clarify that.
All right. But please don't take any of these as final answers
right.
as far as what we're going to come back Mr. Eichmann was asked.
You're going to bring us back some proposed code.
Absolutely, absolutely. But that's not all we're doing. We've already worked. I've already spoken with Barbara, and as you can tell, you know, Jim's been on top of this as well. And what we want to do is we want to try to continue to protect the integrity of our sign code and what it represents, which is trying to preserve the aesthetics for the citizens of Palm Coast, as well as preserving, you know, the safety for folks that are pedestrians and motorists in the cities as far as the clutter that comes with a different type of sign. We're going to try to maintain that, but also live by the letter of the spirit of this very recent case so that we don't have situations where we're incurring additional costs for the taxpayers for defending something we can't defend.
Right.
The other thing is, and I don't know if that's bad news, that's news. The other thing I did want to tell you, and I don't have the court order yet, but a judge, you may remember that we have had red light cameras in the city of Palm Coast. I want to make sure you all remember that.
Thanks for bringing that up.
Yes. And some people didn't like them, and so there have been some lawsuits that were brought. And I always break it down into the 2010 pre-Mark Wendell and then after that, post-Mark Wendell. And you may remember that there was a lawsuit that was brought against the city of Palm Coast by a gentleman, Mr. Mayfield. And that was for the pre-Mark Wendell. That was before the state came in 2010 and said, everybody's going to do it this way. And before that, the city of Palm Coast had been doing it in what it contends was a perfectly legal manner of doing so. And that was a lawsuit that was brought many years ago. It's been litigated, and there was a stay pending the decisions of the Florida Supreme Court versus to try to equalize decisions. I'm sorry, that was the postmark one. Mm-hmm. But anyway, this has been going on for some time, and lo and behold, it's been going on for such a long time that unfortunately Mr. Mayfield passed away. And there's a rule that says that when your client is no longer there, you have to substitute in someone who's alive. I mean, I don't mean to be facetious, but I mean in common sense. And there's a time frame. As you can imagine, the rules of our games are set forth, and you have specific time frames in order to do this. That did not happen in this lawsuit. It didn't happen for over 2 years. So it blew the deadline by a substantial amount. And we had pointed this out to opposing counsel and said, you know, you don't have... We discovered that Mr. Mayfield had passed away, and we pointed that out. And ultimately, after a period of time, we moved to dismiss the lawsuit on the grounds that they had not met their procedural requirements. Remember now, in the pre-Mark Wendell lawsuit, there's been no class certification yet.
Right.
The only plaintiff was Mr. Mayfield. There was no one that had yet been added to that lawsuit as far as class certification, even though it's called the class action lawsuit. So we argued to the judge, and this is a little foreshadowing, but I wanted you to hear it because you know, we don't have the court order yet. We expect it any time, but I've been trying to delay that until we actually have the court order. Anyway, the judge ruled about a week or so ago that no, the rules have been broken in a fashion that he was going to dismiss the lawsuit without prejudice. So I can't promise you that lawsuit is gone away forever, but we feel good. We feel rewarded that you know, we've been putting the
judge plaintiff rendered that decision.
I was a judge here in Flagler County, state court judge. We've gone through some judges, so let me see if I can find out. Let me finish this, and then I'll look for that. We've had a series of judges in this thing because it's going on so long. You know, they have several opportunities they can try to appeal, and if the appeal fails, they can try to file another lawsuit with the park. They recently found someone else who got a ticket at least 5 years ago, who wants to come and be the new class representative, regardless. And so the statute of limitations is run on such a cause of action. So, but I just want you to know, this is a good development from the standpoint of the city and the taxpayer. Is it the final word on this lawsuit? I can't make you that promise, but I wanted you to hear it so that you know where we are in that process, because it's been pending for some time. The hearing had been continued for two times at the request of the opposing counsel. And so we finally got to the hearing, got the judge to listen for over an hour, and he ruled in favor of the city of Palm Coast.
It's
almost, yeah.
Hang on.
Next time I say no report, you're going to like it a little more.
I apologize for my recollection on this, but is this the case that we decided not to settle?
ATS settled.
We decided not to, as a body.
Correct, as a council.
And saved the taxpayers at least hundreds of thousands of dollars.
And at this point, I can't tell you,
right.
You know, there's still some things that could happen, but at this point, that looks like a pretty good decision. Mm.
Okay.
Anything else, Mr.
And we haven't even gotten into the substantive defenses. Please understand. I mean, we didn't win this one. This was on, you know, we were city staff and are working on making sure that they're going to make this claim. They're going to do it right.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where we
super duper. Anything else?
That is it.
Discussion by city manager of matters not on the agenda.
Mine is short and sweet, and then I'm going to turn it over to Bo here.
Just a
reminder that this Friday, 11:30 at the Community Center, when we have our annual luncheon with the school district, where principals and directors and school board members and city council. It's always a very positive event, and we've got a great relationship with the school district, so we encourage you to come and hear about good stuff working together. So hopefully see you there. Mr. McGuire's asked for an update on our new team trying to deal with customers that are a little difficult, and Bo is heading up that team, so I've just asked him to give you a very brief update as to where we are on that effort.
Sure. Good morning. Just to let you know, we formed a team, different representatives, obviously logical ones, human resources, risk management, sheriff's office, customer service, folks like that. Met a couple times, and basically our task is to develop protocols and procedures for dealing with difficult customers. Obviously, our first goal is to de-escalate the situation whenever possible. And just so you know, the majority of customers that come into city offices are deal. Our citizens are great. There's generally, it says one in a few instances where customers tend to cross the line and not treat human beings like human beings. So we're putting together protocols and procedures for when those folks cross the line, what to do, whether it's go to your supervisor, call the sheriff's office dispatch, or call 911. And then in follow-up to that, once that's developed, then we'll be doing some training with employees on those protocols and procedures. So just kind of wanted to give that update. It shouldn't be
about a couple more weeks. What, once a week?
Once every 2 weeks. We're kind of in draft stage of our protocols and procedures. And then once that's done, I'll be putting together training for one, methods to de-escalate the situation, but then two, make sure that folks know that if you feel like your safety is in danger, call 911. So.
And have you been in contact with other municipalities to see how they handle it?
Yeah, most municipalities don't really have written procedures and protocols. A lot of places do training on de-escalating the situation, but from what we gather, most of the time it's kind of word of mouth. You kind of learn as you go when the situation occurs. We're trying to, based on our experience, put some definite protocols and procedures when you're in different environments. For example, if you're out in the field by yourself, you're going to handle that differently. If you're in an office and there's members of the public and their safety is a consideration as well. So. By situation, whether you're on the phone, whether it's a threat in writing or in person or in the office, we're putting together those protocols and procedures.
And it bears mentioning, since the public is here, that this team effort is in no way aimed or looking to abridge anyone's First Amendment rights when they come in the door, contrary to popular belief.
Not at all. And like I said, the majority of our customers, we have customers that come here that come every month with being able to pay their water bill, even though online billing is available, that, they know families, so they have a lot of great customers, just those one in few that tend to sometimes cross the line.
Thank you. The chair will entertain a motion to adjourn.
I move we adjourn.